Hello, and welcome to another episode of MLB Talk. I'm here with Andrew Gerson and Chase Midorsky, and this is our final show of the year.
Woohoo! I mean, well, actually, it's sad, but also happy because it's fun.
Isn't it nice right now that, you know, you can look at me through glass and that we're not just sweating profusely?
It is nice. It is nice to be operating at a good capacity.
Okay, guys, let's start off with, let me pull up the notes. So we're about a third of the way through the season. I want to know, what are your guys' AL and NL MVP picks?
Ooh, I love this. Can we start with the AL Cy Young?
Let's go.
Specific.
Okay, we'll do AL Cy Young first.
Yes. All right. I kind of love where this has gone, and I still can't believe I'm going to say this. Dallas Keuchel, everybody. How you like that Keuchel?
I think that it's taken me... How long have I been doing the show with you, Andrew, now? For about 14, 15 episodes, give or take? Somewhere in that ballpark?
Yep.
It's taken me 15 episodes to learn that Dallas Keuchel's name is pronounced Dallas Keuchel, but I'm going to agree and pick him as the AL Cy Young. I think that nobody really predicted the Astros to do anything. He's been the anchor. Reminds me a lot of Tommy Glavine. He's my pick as well.
And my pick as well. I mean, 7-1, 1.76 ERA, WHIP under 1. Astros are in first place. There's no doubt in my mind he wins it.
How many complete games does he have?
Oh,
two.
Yeah, he threw one last Saturday against my team.
Feels like it's four, but the only question I think is, you know, can he keep up the strikeout pace? Because I think, you know, barring, like, multiple Felix Hernandez random explosions, like, last night, they have to assume it's going to be between those two. And I feel like the dividing factor for voters is going to be the strikeout rate. So do you guys think he can keep that up?
I think he can, but I think instead of Felix Hernandez, his biggest opponent is actually Corey Kluber. Kluber has picked it up so much. Strikeouts have been insanely high. I would agree that King Felix is also in that conversation, but I think that Kluber is number two, and Keuchel will still keep the strikeouts up and finish one.
Okay. Well, so do you think that Keuchel went out because of the ERA, or, like, what? Because, I mean, the way I see it, like, if Kluber is really going to stay through with this, his ERA is definitely going to be below three, and every other category outside of wins, he's probably going to be beating Keuchel.
Keuchel is going to win it solely based on the fact that the Astros are finally good.
Okay.
I'm going to come in with a dark horse here. It's a guy we were actually just talking about outside. He's on my fantasy team. Chris Archer, ladies and gentlemen. This is a guy who was a top prospect coming up, has this great electric stuff. The win-loss record isn't great. It's 5-4, but he's sitting on a 2.12 ERA, a .99 whip. Ton of strikeouts. He's pitched deep into every game. And I think if Tampa shows that they win this week, yeah, at least this year, I wouldn't be surprised if Archer gets votes.
That's a really interesting pick. I think that that's definitely a possibility. The big thing for me is going to be consistency. It's always been an issue for him. I think now it's more probably mechanical. If he's on, he's going to be great. And then I think also, you know, to add, because the Rays this year are very sort of under the radar, even though they're, you know, basically leading the division right now, I think they have to win the division for him to really be in consideration. Which is a shame, because it's really not what the award should be about, but I guess it sort of speaks to the crowded pack this year,
mm-hmm.
or, well, right now, anyways. It is only a third of the season through.
And as always, if you agree or disagree with us, give us a call at 310-794-9348. That's 310-794-9348. And now, what are your guys' NL Cy Young picks?
I'll start this one off. Going with the Bruin boy. My NL Cy Young pick is Gerrit Cole. I just think this was the year a lot of guys, you're seeing it with Bryce Harper, all these young guys who have a ton of hype, there's that one year where they string together some solid years in the past, but this is the year that they put it together. He's become the unquestioned ace of this Pirates team, in my opinion. He's got a 1.9 ERA right now, 8-2, 1.08 whip, high strikeouts. He's a guy I don't see wearing down anytime soon because he's got this 6'4", 220 build. And I think if the Pirates finish around 500 in the playoff race, which I don't think they make it, but I think they'll contend, I think Cole ends up with the Cy Young.
Okay, I'm going to throw out probably a little more obvious of a name. Well, I guess Gerrit Cole is pretty bit high up there. I'll give that a lot of credit. But I'm going to go with Max Scherzer, the man who has shown that, of course, it's a lot more fun to pitch in the NL than it is the American League. I just think, you know, it's a huge advantage for him to be able to get to strike out pitchers every time he's out on the mound. So that, to me, just kind of changes everything for him. And I think he's probably going to – I honestly kind of see him running away with it this year.
My original pick was actually Gerrit Cole as well, but instead of agreeing with Chase, I'm going to bring out a big dark horse here and say Bartolo Colon. He's leading the majors in wins right now, and if he is able to lead the league in wins at age 42, he deserves a Cy Young.
Have you seen the guy lugging out doubles also? It is just a beautiful sight to see.
Yeah, I think he might win the AL Cy, or NL Cy Yuck. Yeah. Way to steal an unpopular joke, I know, but I no, you don't get awards for wins. Sorry.
Okay, now let's move it to the MVP conversation. Who's your AL MVP?
I was thinking about this earlier. It's really hard. That's all I've got to say right now. So why don't you guys go? Because honestly, like, I couldn't make up my mind earlier.
So I was gonna pick Nelson Cruz, and then I was just looking at the home road splits. He's still hitting the crap out of the ball, but the Safeco Field versus everywhere else splits are not too low-esque, but he's hitting 300 at Safeco Field, near 4 everywhere else. So I'm going to go a little outside the box on this one and pick a guy who the WAR community has loved for his defense at third base the past 2 or 3 years. I'm going to go with Josh Donaldson as my MVP pick. He's been the two-hitter in that Toronto lineup, probably the most under-the-radar fantastic move of the offseason just because people kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it just got buried in everything else that happened. I mean, there's been so much activity.
But right now, he's hitting 314, 15 homers, 39 ribbies.
Last six games, 6 home runs.
Yeah, high 3 on base, still playing outstanding defense. And really, in a Toronto lineup where Bautista and Encarnacion aren't having, you know, the years we expect from them. Reyes has been hurt. Russell Martin, as we were saying, super streaky. He's really been the anchor of this lineup that's kept them in the midst of the AL East.
And I think John Gibbons deserves a lot of credit for putting him in the two-hole. Not a lot of managers are prepared to put their best hitter in that spot, but he realized the advantage of getting that sometimes extra at-bat and just being slightly higher up the order, you hit less with 2 outs. So really smart there, and I mean, there's not... How bad was that trade for the A's looking back now?
Absolutely terrible. I mean, Brett Lowry has just been atrocious for the A's.
Yeah, I think he's unfortunately one of those prospects who doesn't look like he's going to pan out, or is at least a couple of years away from really becoming a complete player. And Donaldson, on the other hand, I mean, could the A's have been good this year if Donaldson was still on the squad?
I don't think he would have made a substantial difference. They'd have more wins, no doubt about it, but they're still going to be behind the Astros, the Mariners, and the Angels, as well as the Rangers, surprisingly.
Yeah, and I think the biggest difference with this year's A's, too, is even the bullpen, which the A's have always had this ragtag bullpen that somehow works, and this year, Tyler Clifford's a pretty proven commodity at this point in the closer's role, but there's no... Chad Bradford's. There's no Ryan Cook.
You know, I was actually going to say the opposite. Having watched him, Tyler Clippard, I'm really not seeing from him what he usually has, which I like to think is a lot of command, and that's what really made his stuff shine. I think he's definitely proven that he's more of a setup guy, and that missing Sean Doolittle for now what's going to be way much more time considering he went back on the DL, I think, really hurts them. But, of course, the main problem is you got to score runs and not give up so many to freaking be in the position to win the game when your closer comes in. So
I have a question, though, for you, Chase. Will Donaldson win MVP if the Blue Jays miss the playoffs?
It will be tough to say. I think it depends a lot on how the rest of the league does. I'd like to think, though, if the Mariners make the playoffs, Nelson Cruz probably wins the MVP, I feel like, despite the DH stigma, especially if he keeps the whole average up, the high average up.
Well, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Okay, we're actually getting a call, so I'm going to put you on right now. Hello, welcome to UCLA Radio.
Hi. Hey, Dan.
Good, how are you?
Pretty good.
What'd you call in for?
Calling in for the MLB talk.
So how do you feel about Josh Donaldson? And
actually, I came in to challenge you guys' opinions on the NL Cy Young Award. I think there's one guy who's been popping up all over the national big boards, and I think that is our very own Matt Grace out of the greatest high school in the nation, Palos Verdes High School, and our own UCLA. He's posting up a solid 5.25 ERA. So far, he kind of got shelled in his last outing for 4 earned runs. So we'll see how he does. But I think he'll end the season on top. He's the best reliever in the bigs right now.
Well, we haven't seen a reliever win since Dennis Eckersley, right?
Kanye.
Oh my God. I keep forgetting. Okay, but that asterisk, if we're going to go there. But, yeah. Well, thanks for your call. And, yeah, sorry, but Matt Grace doesn't have a chance.
Nope. So, to my AL MVP pick, I have to pick another Astros player because I'm being an Astros homer this year and pick Jose Altuve. They would be nowhere near where they are now without him constantly getting on base. He's been in a little bit of a slump, if you want to call it. He's still batting 300. But he just sets the table for them to get RBIs with Gattis, who's hitting under 230. Chris Carter, I don't even think he's hitting above 200. But he's really been the life of that team.
I really like that pick. I was almost thinking of it myself. You know, there's a lot to be said for his legitimacy as an MVP candidate. The only problem is the advanced statistics don't back it up and the normal statistics don't back it up. It's an intangible. I think without him, that lineup can't really function, honestly. And that you can't, there's no way to measure that. So it kind of sucks. I definitely agree with you. If they're able to continue to win throughout the year, that he should be worthy of that type of consideration. I'm sure he'll get some votes, but there's no way to really put into context what he does for that team.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick before I move on, let me throw one more name out there for you guys. So right now the Rangers are 26-25. This is a team that most experts, some not experts such as myself, predicted to finish in the bottom three of baseball. And we're almost a third of the season in at this point, and they're over 500. If the Rangers finish above 500, do you think if Prince Fielder keeps up this current pace that he's in the MVP consideration?
By current pace, do you mean 340, 40 bombs?
If Prince finishes with 30 homers, over 100 ribbies, and keeps up his average and on-base of 359, 412 on-base?
I mean, he would be my MVP.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt.
I think there's so much. What's crazy to think about is like the fact that literally nearly all their starting pitchers are on like the 60-day DL. They don't have anybody. Like, if they had Yu Darvish right now, they could already have, like, you know, 30 wins or something. It's really creepy to think about.
Yu Darvish, Derek Holland.
Matt Harrison.
Who's the other lefty who pitched for them?
They have Colby Lewis and Wandy Rodriguez, Ross Duttweiler.
Yeah, right now, if they had Gallardo, Darvish, Colby Lewis, Wandy Rod, that's my nickname for him.
Martin Perez on the DL.
And Martin Perez. I would take Martin Perez over Derek Holland, for example. Like, that's a legitimate rotation.
This DL right now, you have Profar, Harrison, Darvish, Derek Holland, Detweiler, Neftali Feliz, and Adrian Beltre. That's like six or seven guys who made an all-star team in their lifetime all on the
And video. I feel like even like Rougned Odor was supposed to be a lot more than he has been this year. He got demoted to AAA, I think. And, yeah, I mean, gosh, when you think about it, the Rangers are going to be scary next year. This Fielder trade worked out decently.
Mm-hmm. Fielder's only batted over 300 once in his career, so he's going to come back down to earth.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. The thing is there's a big, big effect to not playing for a year. You know, we've seen this happen with A-Rod and players in other sports. So I don't necessarily know that it is going to come down so much. Just from having him seeing him play a little bit, his swing looks great. It's very it's not as too long of a swing. It just very powerful, and he really seems to be in like the right state. I don't really know how much he will come down.
Yeah, I watched him in that 3-game series against the Yankees because a lot of the games were televised. I think Prince is back. I mean,
he looks better than ever. So
yeah, I think we're starting to see that 1 year in Detroit was a bit of a down year, and he was hurt last year. And what we have to recognize at the end of the day is Prince Fielder, when you concoct what the ideal DH should swing like, look like, play like, it doesn't get too far off from the Prince Fielder mold. And I think he's just adapting to the DH role. It takes guys, you know, some time. Last year, yeah, he was hurt, but it was also adjusting to the DH, this and that. Look at, I mean, Adam Dunn. Not that Adam Dunn was ever great for the White Sox, but that first year he was historically bad, and then he started hitting home runs again.
Yeah, it's confusing. I also think, you know, Detroit was not the right place for him. It's not something I'll ever really have the answer to, but it just didn't really seem like the right fit for him as a player, and he just looks a lot more comfortable. I don't know how else you can put it, really.
No, I would agree too. What are your guys' NL MVP picks?
No, you go first.
All right, well,
just take him, Chase. Take him.
I'm not going to take him. I know everyone wants me to say Bryce Harper, but I'm not going to say it because that would be conventional wisdom, and I don't know. I'm against conventional wisdom. So the guy I'm going with is a guy who in 2013, I probably would have voted for to win the NL MVP. That's Paul Goldschmidt for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, this guy's numbers: 351 average, 15 homers, 43 ribbies, on base is .460, on pace for 25 steals, is playing a Gold Glove caliber defense. This is just literally a guy. There is nothing he can't do at this point. And it's just unfortunate that Arizona's playing how Arizona is, because he's a superstar that's going to get lost in the shuffle.
The most incredible thing about Paul Goldschmidt, too, is he was never a top 100 prospect, and now he's arguably the best player in baseball. And it's crazy to see how guys can change from the minors league to the majors. We're actually getting another call. I'm going to go ahead and put you on now. Hello, welcome to MLB Talk.
Hola, me llamo Ryan. ¿Cómo estás?
Hello, how are you doing?
No habla español.
Muy bien, señor. I like to talk about my favorite pick for NL MVP. He is a player on my favorite baseball team, the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's number 23, Adrian Gonzalez, Tyson Arriba.
Why are you going with Aegon?
He's the best, man. That's all it is.
Past 46 games, he's only hit like 5 home runs or something.
But the RBI, senor. Look at the RBI.
So much more than RBIs. All right, well, thanks for your call, Ryan. Pretty interesting name for someone with that kind of influence. Let's take a break on the calls for a second, since we don't have a screener. I don't know, like, who's going to be next.
Give us a call in like 15 more minutes.
Pirate obsessed with baseball next, and after that, Taser Bill. Like, who knows? It's all up in the air. Chase is loving it. Ryan, we really appreciate that. That was great. Thank you. But, Adrian Gonzalez, I actually think if he could sort of hit for a little more power, maybe he does have a chance. It's just May was not good for him after an unbelievable April.
So I was also going to pick Paul Goldschmidt. So, Andrew, if you could go now I look and find someone else.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw out the guy who could have been MVP last year, is currently hitting .220, but has 44 RBIs.
Hell yeah.
He recently got a $325 million deal. Giancarlo Stanton, everybody. And I'm not taking him based on how he's playing now. I'm taking him based on the fact that he's going to play better in the future. Right now, he is swinging at everything. He cannot lay off a slider down in the zone, and he's just striking out like nuts. But he still has 44 RBIs, which is, like, absolutely insane, as either first or second in the National League. I think he's going to get himself fixed. He's going to make those adjustments, and then he's going to start raking like last year, going to put that average closer to 300, OBP near 4, slugging probably close to 6. So that's what I'm talking about. Also plays great defense, can steal a couple bags, and hits the ball better than pretty much anybody.
And I'm going to have to go ahead and pick Matt Holliday. He's had a unbelievable on-base percentage this year, or on-base streak, actually. And he's really been carrying the Cardinals. They lost a big guy in Adam Wainwright, and they really haven't missed a beat. They're still leading that division, and although I don't think he'll win it, I think he has a great shot at it.
All right, here's my last guy I figured I'd bring up because he's a prime candidate for regression, but we'll go with the theoretical projected numbers today. So, if D. Gordon, for however he does it, keeps up his current pace and finishes the year with 238 hits, 61 steals, hits 366, but has a combined 37 extra base hits with 43 ribbies and only 31 walks, does he even garner any consideration?
Well, for starters, you have the Marlins fiasco of a team, so I think that's a huge obstacle. But then also, I think for the type of player he is to have an MVP type season, you just have to amass like such good totals in like every category. I just think it's going to be hard to say, oh, look at this guy who's super fast and scores a ton of runs but doesn't do anything else too great. It's just kind of tricky. I would say if he managed to hit above 400, obviously not going to happen, then he can be your MVP. But otherwise, I just feel like someone else is going to outshine him.
No, I agree. I don't think he won't be able to keep it up. And if he does, he just doesn't have the star name and the star team to really get him enough votes to win MVP. So moving on from our discussion of award picking this year, do you guys think the Twins can actually keep up being first in their division?
I don't think they'll keep up being first, but I could see them sticking around 500 for the few reasons being, one, I think Glenn Perkins in the back end of the bullpen is relatively legit at this point. Two, Phil Hughes. I don't think last year is the real Phil Hughes, but I think Phil Hughes will pitch better. They're going to get Urban Santana back in the second half, and again, while that's no, you know, savior to a team, it's at least a guy who has a pretty good track record of 200 innings a year. They could potentially bring up Sano and Buxton in the second half, and there's just no way Joe Mauer can play any worse than he is right now.
This is like the most perplexing team for me. It's really defies understanding because you look at their lineup, you've got three players who are playing well, Brian Dozier, Torii Hunter, and Trevor Plouffe. One of those players, Torii Hunter, you don't expect to keep playing well. Then you've got Joe Mauer, who's like, you know, he's kind of just a meh player at this point because, you know, you need more out of your first baseman than someone who's just going to get on base. The rest of the lineup is awful. And then your pitching staff is kind of a mess. The only good thing about it is Glenn Perkins, who's, in my opinion, like one of the best closers in the American League at this year. But here's what's crazy. All they have to do is play at a 500 pace and wait for Urban Santana to come back, and then they have a legitimate chance to win this thing. That's what's insane to me. So I mean, they're not even playing that well right now. They're just, I saw some funky stat from one of the, like, Minnesota beat writers saying that basically they're just hitting extremely well in high-leverage situations and making other teams hit extremely poorly in high-leverage situations, and that's where most of it comes from. So, I mean, but to me, it's like all they have to do is just, like, not go on a 10-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. And they can, because they've already gotten so much ahead of 500, they just have to hold the course.
Before the season, I thought the Twins would actually finish with the worst record in baseball. So it's been just amazing how well they've done this year. But like you guys said, I don't think that they can keep it up pretty much. They've been hitting really well in positions when they've needed it, but they don't have any big-name batters besides Brian Dozier, who's really going to do well this year. I mean, maybe Torii Hunter, but he's 38 or 39. The pitching staff, when Phil Hughes is your ace for the season until Urban Santana gets back, I just don't see them keeping it up.
Yeah, and I just think the Royals are definitely the team to beat in the Central at this point. The reason being, I think the bats are for real this year. I think Hosmer and Moustakas, these breakouts are for real. They kind of lucked out with Morales, but he's been hitting. But also, even their pitching, Ventura hasn't pitched like Ventura's been capable of. They haven't had Danny Duffy at full health. They're going to get Chris Medlin at the midseason. And Chris Medlin, yeah, he hasn't pitched in a while, but he was a really, really solid, you know, frontline guy for the Braves.
I wouldn't be too positive on Medlin. He had that absurd year. But, I mean, he had two Tommy John surgeries. He's a completely unknown quantity.
even if they're not relying on him, though. I mean, say you get Duffy back in a good Ventura, you're still going in with Ventura, Duffy, Volquez is somehow turned back the clock. Vargas, you know you're going to get innings. And they score a lot of runs. The bullpen is still not necessarily as great as last year when it was historically good, but they're getting Luke Hochaver back. So they're getting another power arm. I don't think there's anyone that's going to catch them. I think the next closest team would be Detroit because of the offense. But behind David Price in the rotation, it's just question mark, question mark, question mark.
For me personally, I love the Indians. I really like their lineup. And more than that, I love their pitching staff. So I'm waiting for Francisco Lindor to get called up. Replace Jose Ramirez, which is, he's like, of all the Ramirez's, he's the least well-known for sure. So I think once that happens, their defense is going to get a lot better. Jason Kipnis is going to continue to be leadoff man of the year, essentially. Well, okay, I guess there's D. Gordon, but Jason Kipnis had 50 hits and 30 runs in May. He's like the first person since like 1930 to have a May that good. It's just absurd. I think the Indians are awesome. Michael Brantley is like, he's not a superstar, but he's a star. And I think that I don't believe necessarily in the Royals' offense or pitching staff so much. I don't believe in their starting pitching so much. So I don't know. I think it's kind of wide open.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a race between those three teams, though, I think.
Public service announcement real quick. I know Andrew's going to be real happy about this.
No, I'm not. Because he's on the bench.
Oh. Sorry. Well, Joey Gallo had two ribbies in his first hit. And
a double.
And our new station general manager, Zach Seidel, is currently posting notes at me, making pretty faces while he's all suited up. And he wanted me to tell you that the As, I don't know what that means, are going to be in the World Series. And that the team with the NY sucks. I don't know. He must be talking about the Mets.
I think he's talking about the New York Giants.
It's reasonable.
They've been terrible because they haven't been playing at the Polo Grounds for the last 50 years, right?
I thought you were talking about the Eli Manning Giants. What's he doing now? Let's continue.
Not even going to talk about
it. Ignore him.
Back to baseball. The Mets are going to be the first team to use the 6-man rotation for the time being. They were the first to use a 5-man rotation in the late 60s, early 70s. Do you guys think that they'll stick with the 6-man rotation for the rest of the year?
Well, I think they've come out and said they're only doing it till August. So, I mean, I almost kind of think that they might, that's kind of a ploy and that they are going to stick with it. But we'll have to see. I mean, you know, if Matt Harvey and Jacob deGrom continue to pitch this way, I don't think it's right for them to say, oh, well, we need to shave 3 starts off their year so that way they can pitch into the playoffs. That's just like counting your eggs or your chickens before they hatch. So
my biggest thing is, for the time being, I'm not opposed to it with Harvey still coming back from surgery, even though he's looked good. The thing is, though, with you just said with the chicken and the hatching analogy, is you look at the Nationals in the 2012 season. To me, they were unquestionably the best team in baseball, but they sat Strasburg down the stretch. They didn't have a pitch in the postseason, and they blew what was a huge opportunity. The point I'm trying to make here is you need to get to the postseason first. And no offense to, you know, John Neese or Bartolo Colon, but I would rather have DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey pitching as much as possible. I'm drawing a blank on who the 6th starter is for the moment. Dylan G?
Dylan G, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Is the biggest thing is if Dylan G and Jonathan Neese can pitch decently well, I see them sticking with this, but if they're going out there and just getting blown up by guys, there's no reason that they need to stick with having both those guys pitch when you could have Harvey, Syndergaard, and DeGrom having an extra 3 to 4 starts.
It's a weird experiment. I don't really think it's the right team for them to go for it, you know? You look at those Rockies that did it a couple years ago. I mean, that's a team where you need to do it. The 5-man rotation is bordering on too strenuous for pitchers, obviously. That's why so many guys are getting hurt. But I just don't think this is the right staff. It's not a huge mistake, but it's not a great move either.
Another thing, though, is if baseball shortens the season, like there's been rumors about them going down to 154 games, then obviously no reason to have 6-man rotation, in my opinion. But if it stays at what it's at now, I think there's going to be a lot of teams who consider it more in the future.
I don't really think there's enough quality starting pitching in Major League Baseball for that to be a thing. I mean, of course, this last week we had Eduardo Rodriguez showing that all of a sudden he's like an amazing left-handed prospect that the Red Sox had. Chichi Gonzalez throwing Chichi with the no-no for five innings. And Mike Foltynewicz is being awesome. I mean, you know, you could throw out these guys who are young and pitching well, but the truth is most teams don't have more than one of these guys. And I don't really think if teams were to just sort of accept a six-man rotation, that would go all that well. I mean, in a way, it'd create more parity because every 6 day you'd have a crappy starter going out who'd be in the minors. But, I mean, let's put it this way. The Giants have Kevin Correa playing for them in AAA. He had a June 1 opt-out. I have to feel like he opted out because he was pitching well. But we're essentially talking about if teams were to go with the six-man rotation, a team's adding Kevin Correa's every 6 day. I don't want to see that. Chase, do you want to see Kevin Correa every 6 day?
I like Kevin Correa, but
Oh, come on. Boo. No, Kevin Correa sucks. Sorry, Kevin Correa, but he sucks.
Kevin Correa, if you're listening for whatever reason,
you suck, dude. Sorry. No, I mean, let me think of someone else who's equally unmemorable but also memorable for just averageness.
Sean Chacon or Sean Markham.
You literally made me think of Sean Markham. Manny Parra, Randy Wolf. I mean, we've seen so many of these guys go through
Joe
the
Blanton.
League. That's a good one. Dana Evelyn. Ooh. I mean, these are all players that, like, no one wants to see. So I hope we stick with five-man rotations. Or teams start to adopt firemen more. I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at this time, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we'll come back with some injury updates and how they can possibly affect their teams. Hello, and welcome back to MLB Talk. I hope you enjoyed the break. We're going to start off this next half of the show with our tweets of the week. So I'll go ahead and start. My tweet of the week is actually a picture off SportsCenter's Twitter, and it was Giancarlo eating a Kit Kat bar. And I don't know if you guys saw the picture, but it really is a travesty to humanity.
We are going to talk about this, huh?
He didn't even break the Kit Kats apart. He just bit into it. So he ate like four Kit Kats at once. It was just terrible. I've never seen anything worse in my life.
Yeah, he just absolutely dismantled their advertising campaign in one Giancarlo-sized bite.
And
do you not even care, Chase?
I got nothing.
Doesn't this matter to you?
No, I'm not a big Kit Kat guy, and the Marlins are kind of irrelevant at this point.
And we will actually be taking phone calls after this break, so give us a call if you want to talk baseball.
Okay, so Chase, you or me?
I'll give it a go. So I've been very open about my love for new Dodger sensation Jock Peterson, and I particularly liked how in this tweet from Bill Plunkett at Bill Plunkett OCR, when asked why he's been struggling against left-handed pitching, Peterson responds, "You guys are the ones who said I can't hit left-handed pitching. I hit them last year, so I guess you guys tell me." Anytime I see a young guy giving the media a good, you know, F you, I have some respect for him.
I think Zach Greinke is rubbing off on him. That's a Zach Greinke response right there. I don't know what else to say. I think he's been sitting in on Greinke's press reports and just sort of copying his mannerisms.
I don't mean to cut you off, Andrew, but we're getting a phone call. Welcome to UCLA Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. So we're talking about the Major League Baseball, right?
Yes.
All right. I was just curious what you guys thought about Bryce Harper and if this tremendous season is going to continue.
I love it. I think the walk rate's legit, and that's pretty much the only thing that's really different about who he's been so far. I think because he's been walking so much, pitchers just have to come in, and he's just been killing it. And honestly, I expect him to keep doing it. Maybe his average is a little lower, but I can definitely see him hitting 300 with a ton of power.
Yeah. I think he...
What's going on with Clayton Kershaw this year? Is he going to be back to what he was? Or
the truth is he's giving up home runs like a normal pitcher. You know, every year the past couple of years, he's just been amazing at preventing everything. And finally, he's just become a little more unlucky, to be honest. And I think I still expect him to be great, but not as good as before.
And one more question. The New York Mets, do you think they can win the division over the Nationals, or do you think the Nationals got it?
I'll respond to this one as the New York guy. I can see the Mets hanging in there just because the Nationals' rotation has been inconsistent. And honestly, outside of Harper and the resurgent, you know, Escobar, Nationals' offense hasn't really been doing it for me. If the Mets stay healthy, maybe pick up a bat at the deadline, I could see them stealing the division.
Well, Chase, you're forgetting about their starting rotation. I mean, Gio Gonzalez is their five guy.
Yeah, but at this point, Noah Syndergaard is the Mets' five guy. The guy's been pitching lights out, so the Mets...
But Gio Gonzalez is also a veteran, and Noah Syndergaard is a very young rookie.
My biggest thing with the Nationals right now is they actually have A.J. Cole and Tanner Roark starting, while Strasburg and Pfister on the DL. And if I had to compare those guys to the Mets pitchers, I'd pick the Mets pitchers.
Roark had a sub-3 ERA last year.
Roark's good, I'm not going to deny that, but at the same time, he doesn't get the strikeouts that you want out of a good pitcher, and it can be really questionable whether he'll be able to keep it up.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you for calling in.
No problem.
All right, good call.
So for what
got some wub, wub, wub in the background, but, we can live with
it. For what it's worth, I told you guys one of my educated baseball friends was going to be calling. I think that is him calling right now, but...
We're just getting blown up.
We'll
right
go
now,
ahead
man.
And answer it.
Yeah,
hello, welcome to MLB Talk.
Hello, yes. This is Sam calling from New Jersey. Thank you guys for having me on the show. Just I want to talk some Yankees right now.
All right, Sam, what's on your mind?
Well, one thing that's on my mind is today, I'm not sure if any of you are able to catch this at all, on the Michael Kay show on ESPN New York, there was an interview with Yanks GM Brian Cashman, and Kay straight up asked him point blank regarding Steven Drew. He said, what's the obsession with the guy? I mean, he's hitting 160 right now, yet he still finds his way into the lineup. And Cashman simply replied the fact that they're waiting on Reb Snyder to develop in AAA, and they're just going to keep trotting him out there. But which begs the question, with the Yankees really trending around mediocrity right now, 27-25, how long can they continue to put this middle infield out there of Didi Gregorius and Steven Drew? I mean, for me as a Yankees fan, there's a lot of promising things going on this year, but you still have a really terrible middle infield offensively, and at some point that's got to be an issue, you know?
Yeah, Sam, I'll definitely agree with you. I've always been a big supporter of Rev Snyder. I thought as soon as he had an above-average spring, we weren't supposed to contend this year. My thought process was, why not give the guy a shot? I think at this point with Rev Snyder, it's just more the defensive issues. He's switching over to second. I don't know if the glove is there yet. But I think Brendan Ryan began his rehab assignment in AAA. And I know, yes, Brendan Ryan might not be the most inspiring offensive option, but at this point, anything is better than Steven Drew. And I think once Ryan's ready to come up, Jose Pierla will become the backup utility infielder guy. And I think the Yankees finally, after almost a year and a half, cut their losses and get rid of Drew at that point.
Yeah, and in regards to that, I like that Cashman's not looking for a quick fix. He's not willing to trade prospects because between Reb Snyder and Judge and a few other guys, it looks like the Yankees do have something in the farm system for the first time in a long time, which is nice to see. Now you have Betances up there doing his thing as well. So you have some nice young prospects to throw in there with some of the vets they have. But the other thing is that this rotation, it ultimately for me comes down to how well Tanaka does and what you're also going to get from Nova. Because at this point, if you want to make any sort of serious run, in my opinion, you can't rely on CeCe to give you anything more than a bottom of the rotation start in the playoffs. In an ideal scenario, he's your number four guy. I mean, at this point, CeCe's not going to be giving you that much. So I think you really need Tanaka to come back and come back strong. We'll see what he can do. But you have to hope for that all-star performance we had from him last year. I mean, I doubt it'll be as good. Maybe some damage has been done, but he's got to be a top-of-the-rotation guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, Sam, and I think at this point, you need to hope that you're going to get the good Michael Pineda rather than the bad. He had a good start against Seattle last night, out-dueled Felix, but was coming off two mediocre starts against the Royals and Rangers back-to-back. And I agree with you. There's a lot of question marks. Eovaldi, for whatever reason, throws 97, 98 miles per hour, but has a whip of, you know, 1.5, 1.6, doesn't really seem to have that out-pitch. Capuano's just old. CeCe's sort of literally a shell of his former self, but at least he's giving us innings. And I agree, if Tanaka, you know, doesn't come back or comes back at 50%, I think this is a team that's destined for 500, if not below, at that point.
I have to ask, though, do you guys think the Yankees made a mistake trading Yonjervis Solarte for Chase Headley?
No.
No. What is, I mean, what's the mistake? I mean, Solarte was hot for a little while, but I mean, I don't see that as a mistake. Headley had some good games from him last year, and admittedly, he's hitting 255 right now, but Headley's still a solid player. You're not paying a huge amount for him, and, you know, he can play third base. And considering what the rest of the infield looks like, I'm fine with Headley at third. I don't know about you guys, but I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the problem, honestly, I think Headley plays a great glove at third. You know you're going to hopefully get 20 homers, 75 ribbons or so. The trade I had more of a problem with was the Eovaldi trade, because I just don't think that if David Fells was in our rotation at this point, we would be getting much less than we are getting now from Eovaldi.
And you'd still have Martin Prado.
That's the thing. Prado, who hit well for the Yankees, good clubhouse guy, but can literally play anywhere other than pitcher and catcher. while we haven't been, you know, terribly plagued with injuries, an infielder Gregorius and Martin Prado versus Gregorius and Steven Drew, you're not losing that much defensively, but offensively, that's just huge.
And what really shocks me is, I mean, not knowing that much about Gregorius until, you know, he was traded, he came to the Yanks. I mean, I don't get why they expected him to come in and all of a sudden, I mean, look, you knew the guy wasn't going to hit great, but it's reasonable to expect him to hit, you know, 250, 260. And, but I mean, he can't hit. I mean, he flashes a good glove, but the guy can't hit. It's really shocking to me that the Yankees expected him to come in there and be an everyday shortstop with his lack of ability to produce on the offensive end.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that was a big mistake. But let me ask you, as a Yankees fan, would you be opposed to, like, a mega trade for Troy Tulowitzki?
I would. I would, personally. I just think, again, that's something like that that's questionable. I mean, Tulo can play. I'm not saying it in that sense. It's that what you'd have to throw in to get him. I mean, the Rockies aren't just going to give the guy up. That's one of their attractions, because there's not that many attractions in Colorado right now in terms of that team. While they produce offensively, you know, they're not going anywhere fast. So Tulo is a team player. He's been there for a while. They're not going to want to trade him if they're not getting some guys in return. And then it's, what are you giving up? Plus, then you got to dish out that big contract to him. So, no, I don't think you need to do that. I just think that there at some point needs to be somebody that's not Didi Gregorius playing shortstop.
All right, one last question for you. Masahiro Tanaka is obviously somewhat injured, in my opinion, and the opinion of other people on this show. He definitely has some UCL damage. Would you rather have him undergo surgery this year and have the team have a higher chance of making the playoffs next year, or would you rather risk it this year and hope that you make the playoffs and potentially sacrifice next year?
Well, it all depends medically what happens, because, again, I don't understand medically what his deal is in terms of the UCL, how that stuff works. And quite frankly, a lot of people don't understand that, and that's part of the problem, is that it's a very new thing. We're seeing Tommy John surgeries happen at this rate, these kind of injuries, what you can rehab, what you have to go, you know, for surgery for. So we don't really know. You have the guy for a while, and you can clearly see from what we saw for the first half of the year last year, when he's healthy, he's top of the rotation guy, he's an ace, one of the best pitchers in the league. So you don't want to risk his future, but if he's okay to pitch now, and you really have a good opinion that he's not going to risk damage in the future, then absolutely put him out there. You know, don't you bring him on slowly, which they said they're going to bring him out doing 80 pitches, I think, tomorrow night, which is good. I like that idea, as long as you're confident that he's not going to re-injure himself. But either way, it's a gamble. You're either gambling on how long your team could compete, and like this year essentially being a lost year, or you're gambling on your player's future. I would definitely play it safe because of how much they owe Tanaka and how good he can be when healthy, but it's not an easy decision. It's something you got to leave to a trained medical staff, not just fans and analysts, you know? That's just my opinion on the matter.
All right. Thanks for your call, Sam. I think it's interesting how the Yankees fan essentially dodged the question. Because, yeah, it is a gamble either way, but I just wanted to know what would you do. Because what would I do? I would do right now is say, you're going under the knife, because I'm scared and I feel like you're hurt. Anyhow, I wanted to get to my tweet of the week, which I never got the chance to get to. So mine is from Anthony Castro Vince. I'm sure I'm pronouncing his last name wrong, but his Twitter handle is at Castro Vince. Commissioner Rob Manfred. Not having NL pitchers hit would deprive us of the entertainment Bartolo Colon has given us this year. That's right. Rob Manfred said it for us. He has not been a boyfriend. He's a Manfred. He understands the commissioner's role. Good for him. Good for Bartolo Colon. Good for baseball.
I love it. And so moving back to a little bit of what we were talking about with Tanaka with injuries, Strasburg has a strained trap muscle. How worried are you guys about the Nationals pitching now that they don't have him or Doug Fister?
Well, they look real smart for keeping Tanner Roark, I'll say that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Yeah, I just think another thing we were talking about. Half of our discussions, I've come to realize, 50% of the people we talk about on the show, me and Andrew and Brent today, have talked about outside in regards to one of our fantasy teams. But I think they still have Zimmerman, and Zimmerman has appeared to really turn the corner to get back to the ace status that he was. Scherzer has been, it's hard for me to ever say anybody's ever worth a $210 million contract, but yeah, Scherzer has pitched like that so far, in my opinion. And yeah, there's a lot of question marks, but on the flip side, they'll get Fister back. Gio's still been solid, and I still think this is probably one of the three or four teams to beat in the NL.
Mm-hmm. And Jonathan McCrory was just reinstated off the DL after missing almost 6 weeks. Is he good enough to get the Brewers out of last place?
No. No one player is good enough to fix what they've got going. Well, I mean, what is last place? Last place in the NL or last place
in the NL Central?
I mean, looking at the other teams, what other options do you have, really, for last place?
Reds.
The Reds? I think the Reds are better than the Brewers. The Brewers are just terrible. So, no, he can't fix it. Not to mention, I mean, he wasn't playing well before he's hurt. It's only been one game, but he went 0-4, and he's already...
he wasn't batting well to begin the year
either.
And
he's 0-1. Yeah, that's my point. Basically, he hasn't played well at all yet. He hasn't looked anything like the Jonathan Lucroy of 2014. So, he's not going to change that much. Okay. All right, to be fair, he's one of the best catchers and pitch framers in the league. And so you do have to give that probably a lot of value, but I don't think he can make this pitching staff better. And the offense, he'll help the offense, but the bottom half of the lineup is just so shallow. It's like they're just the last place team this year. That's what it is.
And this past weekend, Adrian Beltre seriously strained his thumb and is expected to miss at least 2 weeks. Do you guys think that Joey Gallo can come up and keep the Rangers on their hot streak, or do you think this was the nail in the coffin?
I think you never know. I can honestly tell you I didn't think Chris Bryant would perform like he has right away, but I think Gallo, it's going to be for 2 weeks, essentially, if he doesn't hit. You know, worst comes to worst, he hits poorly, it's 2 weeks, you send him back down. At least you have a reason to keep him back down potentially next year. If he hits, great. You keep him on the big league roster, you find a spot for him. It's sort of a win-win scenario for them.
Here's the thing about Gallo. I mean, he's going to strike out more than, you know, up there with the big guys, Chris Carter, you know, whoever you want to throw out there. But this guy walks a ton. I think he really does have a good eye. The big thing is the length of his swing and holes in his swing. That's what I think is causing him to be a strikeout type guy. I think the fact that he's got the discipline and he's got the power, I could definitely see him staying up longer than that call up. That's kind of what I expect to happen. Maybe he gets sent down later after, you know, pitchers figure out a way to beat him and maybe he doesn't adjust or something like that. But you just gotta love what this guy brings to the table. More power than, I mean, Chris Bryant's really the only person I think who can match him in power and in-game power, which is probably more important. So I'm a big fan of the kid. I think, you know, you would have liked to see him develop a little bit more, but hey, throw him into the fire. Maybe he'll come out fine with some baby dragons.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how he plays. And Verlander, hopefully, Verlander only has one more rehab start before coming back. Do you guys think he can be a difference maker this year for the Tigers?
No.
There's a spot for him. There is a spot because Max Scherzer left and Anibal Sanchez hasn't really been great. And even David Price, I mean, you know, he's the inning eater ace. But the truth is he's not really in that. To me, anyways, David Price is no longer in that upper echelon where he's striking out a ton of guys and not allowing hits. I think David Price is so much around the strike zone that it's going to keep him and Madison Bumgarner in this group where these are absolutely elite guys, but because of the way they pitch, which I think is a good way to pitch, it does cause them to give up more runs at times. So I really don't love David Price. So I do think, you know, if Justin Verlander were to find his velocity, find his command, find his curveball, there's no reason this guy can't be a valuable fourth or fifth starter to them.
Chase, I have to ask you, did you see Shane Green or Buck Farmer pitch this past weekend? Because I don't think either of them are anywhere as bad as Verlander will be when he comes back. So I think I don't think he'll be that good, but he's definitely better than those two pitchers.
Oh, I think he could be a viable replacement. I just don't know if it's worth it for the Tigers to bring him back this year.
Mm-hmm. And so now that we are done with this, we are going to bring back an old segment that we have not done in a while. It is called the WWE Match, if I'm correct.
WWE Match of the Week. I'm just waiting for the musical cue. Do we have the musical cue?
We do.
We're on it.
All right. All right. I'll start the introduction while the musical cueing is coming. So we did this thing. Brent's our intern. He's done a great job. This is from slightly before his time, but the WWE Match of the Week was the conception of me and Andrew. He came up with it. I kind of ran with it because, yeah, I don't know.
You own it. That's why.
So, that said, with my time in the state of California coming to a close, I figured it would be appropriate to crown a King of California Baseball before I leave. So, to do so, this week we'll be having a 5-man ladder match with the keys to California hanging in the balance. And representing each team are the men that I deem to be the face of each California baseball franchise due to a combination of longevity, marketability, and success. So, representing the Athletics will be Sonny, 50 Shades of Grey. For the Dodgers, Yasiel, I can't drive 55, but I can drive 155, Puig. For the Padres, Andrew, if I give up 5 runs but strike out 12, good start, right? Cashner. For the Angels, Mike, Harper can have the hype. I'll take my MVP and millions of dollars, Trout. And last but certainly not least, for the Giants, Madison. I dated a girl named Madison Bumgarner once. Bumgarner. So, there are the competitors. There you go. Who do we have winning? I'll start, I guess. It's a ladder match. I'm going Bumgarner because of the height, or Trout because he's an all-around athlete. But at the end of the day, Bumgarner chops down trees. I like him in a ladder match. Bumgarner's king of California.
I'm going to take Trout because he's got the hops. Swimming upstream on that ladder. Boom.
Part of me wants to pick my boy Yasiel, but I'm afraid he'd hurt his hamstring reaching for the whatever it is to win. So I got to go with Trout, too.
All right.
All right.
Way to go.
And that wraps up our year of MLB talk. We shall be back in September.
Yeah, wait. We got things to plug. Thank you for listening to us at UCLAradio.com. Please listen to our podcast or share.
Our podcast website is UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. That's UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. Not going to hide it. This is a re-recording.
Thank you so much, you guys, for an excellent, excellent, excellent spring quarter. Very excited to come back in the fall. I may be holding impromptu shows during the summer, so maybe I'll tell you guys to call in. And thank you, listeners, for making this a great, great year.
And should we take this last phone call?
I would, but
well,
if you want,
it's 6 o'clock. I think we should hand it over to the news crew.
Sounds good.
Coming in.
Go Yankees.
Go Dodgers.
Go Giants. I got there last. Yes.